welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychology's Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychology's. Each month on Talking Therapies, we will be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. And in this episode, we'll be finding out how to become more body positive in an age where the pressure to look a certain way is more prevalent than ever.
I regularly see people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s and older who struggle with how they feel they should look. But these people are often too embarrassed to talk about it, as they feel it's something they should have sorted out by now. And interestingly, they often tell me that no one's going to take them seriously, or there aren't specific treatments available for them because they feel they're too old sort of to be talking about their body image.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Dr. Christian Buckland. Christian has been working in the mental health field since 2005 and has a special interest in understanding the relationship between food and mood. Between 2015 and 2017, he facilitated the Eating Distress and Dietary Chaos Psychological Group Programme within an eating disorder service at Berkshire Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust. As a professional advisor at eating disorder charity Anorexia Bulimia Care, Christian provides key insight into psychological implications of unhealthy relationships with food. Shortly, Dr. Christian will be speaking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of UKCP, to discuss the real impact society's perception of what beautiful is can have on our self-esteem. But first, here are some comments about body image from the people we spoke to on the street.
The pressure to look a certain way, not just physically, but also what you see and what you experience, I think that has an impact on how you how people present themselves online. It seems to be sometimes two different people.
I think there's been pressure created to look a certain way. But at the same time, there's a massive counter movement at the moment about loving your body and loving the skin you're in. And you've got supermodels like Ashley Graham, who, I don't like using the word plus size, but who are larger than the Victoria's Secret models. And I actually think they've got a really big platform at the moment. So I think, yeah, there is pressure, but there's also a really big counter movement. So, yeah.
I think people do compare themselves to others. And I think quite clearly that can have a negative effect on self-esteem, because often what you see, particularly on certain social media platforms, is not necessarily always obtainable.
Yeah, I think there's a rise of the sort of Instagram star that puts across these images of how you should be living and like this perfect life, and actually there's no real kind of, you don't see the negatives of those lifestyles at all, and I think that's quite dangerous for young people, particularly adolescents and teens.
I think you need to recognise your health and need to look after your health, but I think loving the skin you're in is the most important thing, because that's what you're stuck with forever. I couldn't be more passionate about that.
A report published by the Royal Society for Public Health surveyed 1,479 14 to 24-year-olds. It found that Instagram had the most negative impact on young people's mental health, ranking the highest for creating feelings of anxiety and loneliness, to name a few. YouTube, on the other hand, was found to have the most positive impact. The 2016 Dove Global Beauty and Confidence Report, which interviewed women and girls across 13 countries, found that 69% of women felt pressure from advertising and media to reach unrealistic standards of beauty, with NHS figures also showing a 70% increase in eating disorders in men. It is an issue that affects all genders and age groups. So how can we better promote body positivity in our own lives?
Christian, how prevalent is the pressure to look a certain way?
Well, that's certainly an important question, and unfortunately there is a great deal of pressure to look a certain way. It seems to be a growing trend with much cause for concern, so much so that a number of government departments have created their own research and guidelines into the issue. For example, the Government Equalities Office produced the Body Confidence Campaign in 2015, and health charities such as the Royal Society for Public Health have prepared their own reports, as we heard earlier. There are more and more studies being done to better understand this growing issue, and how best to tackle it. Just wanted to point out a few sort of interesting but quite worrying findings from some of the research. They suggested that 50% of girls and 25% of boys believe their peers had issues with their body image. 60% of girls and 20% of boys have tried to lose weight by the time they're 16. That one really sort of, I don't know, makes me feel quite sad, because up until you're 16, it kind of, you're supposed to be developing and having fun. So to be preoccupied with trying to lose weight sort of makes me feel quite sad for our childhood. By early 20s, 12% of girls and 8% of boys have tried using diet medications, and a staggering 5% of girls have made themselves sick, with 1% of boys by the time they're 25. Some more statistics that sort of are quite worrying are that 5% of girls and 2% of boys have used laxatives in order to specifically lose weight, and between 1 and 5% of adolescents have tried using steroids in order to gain muscle mass. So yeah, it feels quite worrying for me for the younger population. Yeah. It's important to sort of stress though that a lot of the studies do focus on children, adolescents and people in their 20s. So for me, I really want to see more research for people in older ages, so we get a better understanding of what the prevalence really is. Because I regularly see people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s and older who struggle with how they feel they should look. But these people are often too embarrassed to talk about it, as they feel it's something they should have sorted out by now. And interestingly, they often tell me that no one's going to take them seriously, or there aren't specific treatments available for them because they feel they're too old sort of to be talking about their body image. So, in summary, yes, I'd certainly say there's a significant pressure on us all to look a certain way, and it really is a worrying fact.
Mm. It's interesting what you're saying there about young people, scary statistics you've got there. But you're saying other people are susceptible. It's not just something that's around young, perhaps impressionable ages. It actually cuts across all ages and genders. Are there any other kind of groups that you've worked with from your experience that seem to be susceptible?
It's difficult, because there appears to be pressure for everyone to look a specific way, and this really does depend on many different factors. In my view, it's more about the person's lived experiences, which often incorporate their cultural background, societal pressures, lifestyle choices, and cultural factors. And then there's other factors such as their psychological makeup that play a major part. For example, if someone has perfectionistic tendencies, I often find they're more susceptible to developing body image issues. Sometimes it's due to the need to do things perfectly, and they often set themselves unrealistic expectations. So yes, I do feel certain people are more susceptible. However, there are so many more factors that go into that. The one thing that we do know, the research does show, is that women are far more likely to develop body image issues. That's perhaps due to how women's bodies have been objectified over the years. But unfortunately, instead of that being declining, that's growing, and so is body issue in men. So that's a real worry.
Yeah, so it's getting worse. It's very interesting that you're talking about the fact that what seems to impact upon people's susceptibility is actually maybe what has happened to them.
Mm.
What impact does body image have on our mental health?
Having a negative body image often results in people having low self-esteem and lowered levels of confidence overall. And I find that low self-esteem seems to be a common theme within my clinical work. Whether I'm helping someone overcome their low mood or addressing anxiety-related issues, I usually find that low self-esteem plays a major part for them. And for me, it does feel quite easy to understand why a negative body image can lead to a whole range of sort of mental health issues. An example being, if someone is highly worried about their looks, they often feel judged, and this can make them choose not to do the things they once enjoyed, such as going out, socialising, and it often leaves them feeling very insecure and anxious. They also find themselves fixating on their appearance, checking calories, researching cosmetic procedures to make them feel better, and that tends to sort of make them forget about the things that made them once happy, and they also lose contact with their friends and peers. So feeling overly concerned about our bodies easily leads us to sort of becoming lower in mood and quite worried about going out, which is why people often end up seeking help for sort of disorders such as anxiety and depression.
Mm.
I think the other issue is that people often look for compensatory methods to counteract their worries about their bodies. So if they're worried about how they look, then what I noticed is they'll be finding something to make themselves feel better, and it's usually quite temporary. So they may have increased levels of drinking, or maybe they restrict their food intake, or perhaps they overeat as a way of managing the distress they face. So absolutely, poor body image really can lead to mental health issues. But interestingly, to me, it's also really important to recognise that a lot of the time people with poor body image have that due to other underlying emotional and psychological issues. So negative body image can be an indicator of further, deeper emotional distress. So for me, it's important to be wondering why they have become so critical of their bodies, because these underlying issues and feelings really also need to be addressed. For example, people may fixate on losing weight or wanting to increase their muscle mass, or maybe fixating on getting a cosmetic procedure because this is something they feel they can control, whereas the underlying emotional distress maybe is too painful. And it also may be something they feel they can't change because it's in the past, so it's often easier to focus on what we think we can change, such as losing weight or sort of the cosmetic procedures.
Mm. No, it's so interesting what you're saying there, and you mentioned eating disorders, which obviously can have a huge impact on someone's body image, but I get a sense there are some misconceptions about eating disorders, and I wondered if there was anything particular we should be aware of.
Yeah, I think there really are. Probably the most important that springs to mind is how we often imagine who would struggle with an eating disorder. That they would usually be a female in their teens or early 20s. And the reality is that it's not so easy to define that. Boys and men also struggle with eating disorders, and I'm seeing an increasing amount of men coming forward to sort of say they've got an eating disorder, which I think partly due to more awareness and being able to talk about their feelings. However, I also think there is more pressure on men to sort of look good as well. And like I mentioned earlier about older people, I see many, many people in their 40s and 50s and upwards who have got an eating disorder. And some of these may have always had one and not been able to get the right help for them. And sometimes their husbands and wives have no idea, so they've kind of really kept it to themselves. Other people, an eating disorder may well have developed in later life, could well be in response to a traumatic or difficult situation such as bereavement, divorce or illness. And often the older people feel ashamed for having an eating disorder, worried that they're too old to have such an illness, and they quite often tell me they thought there'd be no treatment for them, as the majority of the educational literature on eating disorder is targeted to the teens and 20-something female. So that to me is a really important misconception, I think, that sometimes we think it's only going to be young girls who struggle. It's really, really different from that.
As you were speaking, I was thinking about some of the, I mean, I'm in my 50s now, and I thought, oh, you get to your 50s, you can relax, you can sort of let go of your stomach and so on. And social media feeds targeted men and women my age presenting these perfect 60, 70-something people with full manes of glossy white hair, gym-honed bodies. There's something about social media, is there, that's causing this?
Absolutely. I think you're spot on. And I think that, you know, in addition to sort of the preconception that it's just purely about the youngsters that would struggle with an eating disorder, you're absolutely right. Social media is sort of telling us it's just that age group, but it really, really isn't. The other important thing, I think, about eating disorders, for me, is that it's not just a disorder that's someone's vain and they're simply over-obsessing about how they look. To me, there's always an underlying emotional distress going on for someone who's got an eating disorder. So yes, part of their treatment plan may well be related to body image issues and would be challenging some of those views that come down from the social media and other aspects as well. However, it's also essential to explore what's really going on for that person. To me, it's important to hold in mind that human beings aren't hardwired to starve themselves or make themselves sick. So there's obviously something really important underlying that's going on for them that's contributed to their unhealthy relationship with food. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, an eating disorder often emerges due to the person's early experiences mixed with their overall makeup as a human being. So the perfectionism plays a major part, but for me, more importantly, is those early lived experiences, which can be traumatic events. But trauma doesn't necessarily mean abuse or a car crash. It can simply be teasing or bullying at school, which can have a tremendous traumatic impact on someone, which can then go on to contribute to their relationship with food. An example to help show how an eating disorder may look on the outside to be all about appearance, but really isn't, is that the eating disorder often provides the person with a sense of control and hope over their lives. Unfortunately, that hope and control is usually illusionary and temporary. So if someone is not happy in general in their lives and feels that things won't get better, you might hear them say, "I will be happy when I lose X amount of weight." And this provides them with hope that things will change if they have those perfectionism traits. They usually succeed at losing that weight. The problem is that when they do lose it, they don't feel any different because none of the underlying reasons for their unhappiness have been addressed. So the person may think, okay, I now need to lose another X amount of weight and then I'll be happy. And then they go after the next goal as well, not realising that's where the dangers of having an eating disorder has really started to kick in. So I think when we're talking about misconceptions of eating disorders, that it's important to recognise that it's not just about losing weight unhealthily or making yourself vomit, which would be relating specifically to anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. There's another really important category that I think links really closely with body images we're talking about, called binge eating disorder. And this is often where the person consumes a larger quantity of food than normal in one sitting, but doesn't use any of the compensatory behaviours, such as vomiting, using laxatives or over-exercising. Instead, they sit with feelings of guilt and shame over consuming the large quantities of food. People with binge eating disorder often have so many body image issues that are going on for them, and they're using food as a way to suppress those difficult and painful emotions. And usually, from my experience, those sufferers end up feeling ashamed of themselves because they're desperately wanting to lose weight, but know they're doing the opposite when they binge eat, and this increases the feelings of shame and guilt. And in recent years, I've been really, really pleased to see specific treatments being launched, because it's a disorder that does sit within the eating disorder categories that I do feel gets really, really missed at times, and it's a really important one.
We seem to live in a culture, though, where we compare ourselves with one another. We're constantly looking at others, and of course social media feeds make that all the more accessible to us, but of course we're seeing somebody else's airbrushed image of themselves, aren't we? Is it natural for us to be constantly comparing ourselves to one another? And what harm does that do us?
Yes, it is natural. I think human beings are creatures who are always evaluating ourselves in order to help us grow and develop. And in order to evaluate yourself, you often need some form of benchmark. So the world is full of people who look similar to us. So it's only natural then that we evaluate ourselves to other people. And by making comparisons and evaluations, we often get a sense of relief from anxiety, as we get a sense of knowing how we should act, how we should feel, or how we should look, and therefore something to aim towards. So when we're comparing ourselves to unrealistic images, like the airbrushed photos you were just mentioning that can often appear into the media and social media, this comparison can quickly turn into an extremely damaging thing, as it really, really does erode our self-esteem. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was Theodore Roosevelt who once said, "Comparison is the thief of joy," which to me, I think, sums it up nicely, because if we're not careful, it really, really can rob us of feeling content in our own life. So when we're talking about social media, it's easy to blame the internet and social media for body image issues and for eating disorders as well, but these issues have been around for a long time. In fact, in I believe it was 1689, a physician reported what he considered to be the first case of anorexia that he called the wasting disease. And body image issues have been a major component in eating disorders far, far before the invention of the internet. But that being said, I am a firm believer that social media plays a major part in the rise of dissatisfaction with our bodies. People post their most beautiful pics of themselves, discarding the ones they're not happy with, which leads others to seeing unrealistic impressions of their friends. So social media does certainly set out unrealistic expectations for their users. You see posts of people's amazing holidays, yet you feel you can't afford one. You see a friend looking like the models all do on the TV in their swimsuit, and you feel embarrassed about your body. Your friend posts a picture of themselves without a top on, and you feel embarrassed you've got more body hair than them. And what happens? Our self-esteem just takes a major knock, and we become dissatisfied with our body, with our jobs, and worst of all, with our lives. And unfortunately, it really is an easy trap to fall into. The other difficulty is when we're feeling worried about something such as the shape of our body, our mind unconsciously goes looking for evidence to support that fact that we should be dissatisfied with it. So we end up focusing a lot of our attention on the negative images rather than actually taking note of the ones that sort of give an accurate representation of ourselves against everybody else. And the other thing with social media that I've noticed probably in the last couple of years has been the sort of specific algorithms aimed at profiling, targeting adverts. I feel this is a real concern because you've probably noticed that if you're searching for a specific product online, a few days later it pops up on your social media feed. Well, it does feel to me that that's preying on people's insecurities. For example, if someone's struggling with their body image, they may be searching on Google for ways to lose weight. Suddenly, they find a suggested post or a page to like is a company selling weight loss pills, which reinforces their negative view of their body. So to me, it feels that people are becoming bombarded more and more with products designed to prey on their worries and insecurities in order to simply make them spend more money.
So what I'm really hearing from you is that it really is critically important that we get a much healthier perspective about our own body image. And how important is that? And I guess my question is, where do we start when we're getting this barrage, this daily barrage of pictures?
Yeah, it certainly is really important to view our body in a healthy way. I do think we need to be really grateful for everything our bodies do. By looking at our body in a way that really is productive and positive, helps not just our emotional well-being, but our physical well-being as well. The human body is amazing, and we lose sight of that when we compare ourselves to others in a negative way. It's easy to be consumed with your body image when you feel emotionally low. It can provide that illusionary sense of hope that we can change our lives. Like I mentioned earlier, I'll be happy when I lose some weight, or maybe I'll be happy when I change this or that about myself. So negative body image often leads people to end up in cycles of self-destructive behaviour, which is, if I'm honest with you, is why psychotherapy, in my opinion, really does make a difference for people. It isn't as simple as starting to love your body, but understanding what else is going on for you that's making you unhappy. So it's important to try and sort of have a healthy view of our body, but also have a healthy view of our lives as a whole.
If somebody's listening to this podcast and is really feeling concerned and that your words are striking a chord, is there something that we could do from today to start to amend this?
Okay. I suppose the first thing is, as I mentioned, to understand just how great your body is and to make a committed, conscious effort to be less critical of it. So instead of focusing on what we don't like, actually spend time thinking about what we do like. And yeah, just honestly really realise just how amazing our bodies are. In addition, start trying to identify what triggers us to feel bad about ourselves. So perhaps we could start to notice when we feel negative about ourselves, what situations cause this. Could it be simple as reading our social media that makes us feel bad, that we don't look a certain way and are worried about how we will look when we're on holiday? Or could it be a specific person seems to always say something that we take as critical and makes us feel bad? Becoming aware of the triggers and situations that make us feel this way, we can make conscious choices to whether we want to put ourselves into that situation or not. That to me is a real key one, because I know certain things make me feel bad, so I do my best to avoid them now. I'm not saying avoidance is always the answer, but when it comes to social media, I really feel that's important. It's probably also just important that you accept that you can't see into someone's mind. You don't know what's going on inside someone's inner world. So just because they look like they're happy and look like they've got a great body or whatever it is, you don't know what's really going on for that person. And from my experience, many people whose lives online look like they're fantastic and really happy are simply just as unhappy as everyone else. Another sort of tip, I think, if you hear yourself using the words, certain words like should and must when you're talking about your body, realise this can set really unrealistic expectations. So try to challenge the language you're using. So for example, if you hear yourself saying in your mind, I really should have less body hair, for example, think about why you're saying that. See, the thing is, we can't seem to avoid the need to evaluate and compare ourselves. So it is really important to use comparisons in a constructive way rather than a negative, destructive one. One question I always ask people when I'm working with them who have a poor body image is, tell me what you like about your best friend. And the person usually responds with things like, I like them because they're so kind, they're so funny, I like them because they're always there for me and I know they've got my back. And then I tell them, I didn't once hear you say you like them because they've got such a good body or they're so good looking. And it's certain sort of questions that help us change things in our mind, because that helps someone struggling with body image to rethink some of the qualities that really are important to them. And in turn, that can sort of try and help them sort of think about themselves in a constructive way, and maybe compare themselves to other people in a constructive way as well. Another question I always ask people is, talk to me about what they don't like about their bodies. And the language, again, that they use is really quite interesting. You'll find that people will say, I hate this about me, I'm so ugly, I look so fat in this role here makes me look disgusting. And I'll then say to someone who's just said that to me, would you say that to your best friend or someone who looks just like you? And they always turn around and say, no, because that would be mean. So my question to them is, well, why do we talk to ourselves in such a horrible way if it's something we would never dream of doing with other people? Because I think we can ask ourselves those things, challenge that negative voice that's sort of coming through. Is it a realistic one? Is it one that I would sort of be offering to other people? Because often it's just not the case. I suppose that something that I think is really helpful for all aspects of distress and unhappiness is to find something you're passionate about. So when you're preoccupied with how you look, you'll find that your mind easily wanders back to thinking about, I don't know, anything that just reminds you that you're unhappy with how you look. And one of my favourite messages is that a thought is just a thought. It doesn't mean it's a truth. So just because we think we're overweight or we need cosmetic surgery doesn't mean it's true. And looking up sort of some self-help sort of mindfulness techniques can be a really powerful way of gaining more control over our thoughts and choosing what we think about. Yes, I appreciate this it's not easy to do when you feel really unhappy. However, over time and with the right help, I do feel that changing some of our thoughts, the way we think and feel, can really make a big difference. And if we're talking about in the here and now, the best thing I could ever say to someone if they're feeling really, really unhappy with their body is talk to someone you trust, whether that's your friend, parents, or a teacher. Because trust me, they will usually totally understand your worries, because at some point in their life, they'll have felt exactly the same as you. If you find that that's not helpful, I do feel that therapy is a really, really important way of challenging that, because you can work with someone who's got some techniques and other interventions that can be really useful. So therapy for me, it provides a safe environment for that person to look at their lives as a whole, and it can start to sort of really understand what's going on for the person that's keeping their negative body image going. I also feel that therapy helps to challenge some of those narratives that perhaps we've got stuck with. So, for example, perhaps an aunt once called you chubby, and that had a massive impact on you as a small child and made you believe your fat. Fast forward 20 years, and the same script may be running in your head, even though it's not at all true. So, for me, it's as if there's an unseen and invisible thread that tugs on our old beliefs that we were fat from a child every time we think about our body. And to me, therapy's great for cutting those strings and realising, actually, just because we feel that way today doesn't mean it's true. That's probably just pulling on something from our past. You know, my sort of clinical practice, we look at issues such as raising self-esteem, learning how to be assertive, being able to say no, and understanding how to not let our past impact our present. I often use mindfulness and meditation techniques because to me they're really powerful tools that can form part of therapy. It helps quiet down that internal chatter inside our mind that's often really, really negative and telling us horrible things about ourselves. And lastly, therapy is a really powerful tool in gaining motivation for change. When we're struggling with any emotional issue, our motivation to do anything constructive or to change is totally zapped. Therapy can help gain momentum to become ready for change. I often spend so much time in therapy working on motivation with people, looking at what life would be like if they didn't struggle with their body image issues, and what they would gain and what they would lose if they were free from this way of thinking. And they're really powerful ways of helping the mind to become committed to change. I like to think that we as people have kind of two sides to our brain. We've got the rational side that knows that we should be thinking differently. It knows the healthy weight we should be. It's not stupid. It knows that we need food in us to be okay. However, we've got this other side, the emotional side of the brain, that's frightened of change, doesn't want us to do anything, and that often keeps us from being committed to change and doing the things we know is really, really helpful for us. So me, in therapy, I really, really like working on that motivation part, trying to appease both the rational and emotional sides of the brain so that we can actually move forward in a constructive way that really helps to raise their self-esteem, helps them with their body image issues, and, as I say, looks at the underlying issues that have kind of got them into that position in the first place.
That was really powerful. Thank you very much indeed for that.
That was psychotherapist Dr. Christian Buckland speaking to Sarah Niplock, the CEO of the UK Council for Psychotherapy. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to Find a Therapist section on the UKCP website and have a look through. The website is www.psychotherapy.org.uk and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We are also featuring Body Positivity in Psychology's magazine this month. Or you can find us online, psychologies.co.uk. We'll be doing a podcast every month for the next year with some of the UKCP's psychotherapists. And remember, like and subscribe to our channel to hear it first, and it will help others find us too. So join us again next month. Till then, thank you so much for listening and take good care of yourselves.